Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. Ty Hildenbrand here. Dan Rubenstein over there. SolidVerbal at gmail.com is our email address. Be sure to hit us up on Facebook at facebook.com/solidverbal. We're posting one question per day. It's a hypothetical question. Answer, if you will.
Yeah.
And also find us on the Twitter at solidverbal. Daniel, tonight we're talking NFL draft with Mr. Dan Kadar from mockingthedraft.com. I'm excited for this conversation.
I'm very excited myself. You know, each year we go deeper and deeper into college football. And so each year the NFL draft becomes that much more intriguing.
Yeah.
Just because the scope of what we talk about and our opinions on players and teams and trends, it's always sort of widening, for better or worse. So very excited to hear an expert, as much as anybody can be an expert, when you're guessing on what professional franchises are going to do with money that they're investing in the future. Which, it's always funny to me that people make fun of the mock drafts.
Yeah.
As if anybody knows how to predict anything ever in football, whether it's on an administrative level or on the field. But suddenly, you know, every prognosticator for mock drafts are idiots, but everybody that picks games against the spread, well, they're just good hosts. That's just sensical. We're idiots, too.
You know, I'm a degenerate gambler of sorts.
What?
Last year, I entered an NFL draft pool. It was actually more like an NFL draft party where me and a bunch of guys from work went to the bar, and we all tried to fill out like a first-round mock draft, essentially. And whoever got the most right was the one who took home, you know, like $60 or whatever the throw-in was. It was impossible. I think the winner had like 5 or 6 picks, because last year I think there were a lot of trades and there was a lot of uncertainty. It was impossible to figure out which guys are going where. So I certainly do not envy the position that a lot of these draft prognosticators are in. And I certainly don't envy all the research they put in. Some guys put so much research in and try to figure out exactly where guys are going. They try to wade through the minutia, and they're still not going to be able to do it because it is such a moving target. So what these guys do, this is why I'm interested in talking to Dan this evening, because what they do is just so fascinating to me and has to be labor of love. It just has to be.
The good thing is that right off the bat, we know number one's going to Logan Thomas.
Well, clearly.
That was the 1,000th Logan Thomas, number one overall joke, everybody.
The balloons are coming from the sky. Right. That was our 1,000th Logan Thomas joke. Sure.
Trophy, maybe a free burrito. That's the thing. You know, we have all this time to postulate and to sort of figure out who's going to go where. But everything changes every day. It's such a fluid situation. It's really one of the greatest entertainment spectacles there is in sports, just because we don't know who the players are going to be. You know, when you watch Texas A&M, Alabama, it's, oh, let's see how – we know Johnny Manziel is good. We know the Alabama defense is good. But we have no idea what's going to happen. Here, we have even less of an idea.
Yeah.
There's going to be trades that we won't know about the night before. There's going to be players taken. There's going to be players falling. There's going to be all sorts – we don't know about the gifts, Ty.
No.
We don't know about the gifts, most importantly. We don't know whose wife or girlfriend is going to freak out like Russell Wilson's last year, which was amazing.
Yeah.
So – it really is kind of incredible, the uncertainty and just the wonder of it all.
Well, let me tell you what I'm going to be doing.
Yeah,
I'm going to be sitting down
right off the bat.
No pants, of course.
Right,
I'm going to be sitting down, a nice warm cup of tea. I can't drink an adult libation because it's the eve of my shoulder surgery.
That's right.
So I'm going to be sitting at home, a nice warm cup of something.
Who you don't watch with?
I haven't decided yet.
All right,
I haven't decided yet. Yeah, I'm going to be sitting in front of the TV, warm cup of tea. I'll have the second screen. I'll have Twitter out.
Food selected?
I have nothing selected. I'm just going to wing this.
Wow.
I'm going to be watching for suits. I'm going to be watching for bad picks. And I'm going to be listening for Hall of Fame by The Script and Will.i.am, which, by the way, I called back in like November as the official draft song this year. I don't know what it is or if it's going to be this song, but my money for many months has been on Hall of Fame by The Script and Will.i.am. And damn, it better be the song.
That's a tradition. I totally forgot about that. What do we have? What are some options, Ty? I know that
I don't know. I call
on
this one. I call Hall of Fame.
Because I had it a couple of years ago. I got it wrong last year. I'm looking at the top sort of. I'm looking at the top songs on Spotify. That's where we're at as a country. You know what I'm going with?
You going Pitbull?
Nope. I'm going Suit and Tie. Lil JT.
Wow.
Suit and Tie. I mean, that's a theme of the evening. It's looking good in your suit and tie. I don't know. Maybe we may have missed commercials where it's already been given away. That's my guess.
Last year, if I remember correctly, they had someone write a song just for the draft. Like they had extra money in the budget and they just, they ESPN had someone make one, which is crap because they need to play Hall of Fame. I'm telling you, this song was written for explicit purposes of the NFL draft. They need to play Hall of Fame. And if they don't, I'm going to be very angry.
Here's my dark horse. Yeah. I got a couple dark horses. One, Take the Money and Run, Steve Miller Band.
Going old. An oldie but a goodie. A classic never dies.
What about Some Nights? Fun.
See, now that's a decent play.
That's not bad. Local
Grammy Award winning group.
They won album or record of the year.
I think they were best new group. Something like that. They won a Grammy, whatever.
They won a Grammy. Whatever they won something.
Sure.
But, you know, it's not that. It says explicit on Spotify, but I don't know how explicit it actually is, if they're just going with the chorus or something. That's my dark horse.
Here's a sleeper. Taylor Swift, 22. Just saying.
No. I would love it, but no.
Probably not going to happen. All right. Well, on that note, before we go any further, just want to remind you, we are brought to you tonight by Sherry's Berries. Go to berries.com. berries.com. Click on the microphone at the top right corner and type in our promo code SOLID. You can get giant dip strawberries sent to whomever from Sherry's Berries for only $19.99, which is a 40% savings. And just for Solid Verbal listeners, you can double the berries, double the goodness, and double the fun for just $10 more. Dan, you sound like you're a little bit under the weather right now.
I'm not great, but here's the good news. I was a lot worse last night, this morning. Went to a local drugstore, took like generic Claritin, got some tea in me. I'm soaring. I feel great. I don't sound great, but I'm feeling great.
You know what would make you feel better?
What's that?
A dozen Sherry's Berries.
Oh, it is good. You get some potassium. You get some vitamin C. You're boosting that immune, getting some flavor. It's great. A good draft night snack.
I think so.
You're talking handheld. So you're not cutting knife and fork, even though you could, because these are so large.
You almost need a bib to eat the berries, though. They're right. Very juicy.
But great. It's a good party food. You have people over for the draft. You go solo. You don't have to feel guilty about it. It's a reasonably good snack to have after a great meal.
It's fruit, and chocolate isn't all that bad for you.
No, good for your brain.
Yeah.
So I'm saying right now, get that Sherry's. If you've already gotten Sherry's Berries, if you need to rush order Sherry's Berries, do what you can. Get that Sherry's Berries for the draft. Your draft night's even better with all that delicious.
Absolutely. All right. Well, again, you can order by going to berries.com. That's berries.com.
Yep.
Click on the microphone, type in our promo code SOLID, or if you so choose, you can call 877-BERRIES. That's BERRIES. And give our promo code there. Again, the special is $19.99 for one dozen Sherry's Berries or an additional $10. Just an additional $10 will get you two dozen. It's a pretty good deal with Mother's Day coming up. Just saying, think about it. You don't want to wait too long. Order now. Again, berries.com.
Do it.
All right, Dan. Well, joining us now, another Dan here to discuss the NFL draft with us. As you know, it takes place tomorrow. Dan Kadar from MockingTheDraft.com. Dan, how are you?
I'm great. Great. Very busy time of the year, of course.
Now, you do this year-round, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Dan and I don't.
Shocker.
If we want that coverage, we have to come to people like you. And quite honestly, it fascinates me because the draft is such a moving target. And I've always envisioned the people that make the projection sort of being in a vacuum with just raw data and a lot of anecdotal evidence. How exactly do you figure out who can and can't play?
Well, you know, a lot of the time it's you watch more college football than anybody, and that's basically it. I mean, I can't think of how many times I've canceled on my friends to watch a 10 o'clock Pac-12 game or something, just so I can, you know, see some kid that plays for Arizona. So you know, a lot of it is just watching a lot of stuff. A lot of it is, you know, you talk to people and you trust certain people's opinions. And, you know, the big thing is that, you know, we're watching these players for 3 and 4 years. So you're getting a good baseline. And, you know, some of these guys, you know, LSU or Alabama's on TV almost every week. So you're seeing them so many times anyway. So, football is a complicated game, but it's not that complicated where you can't figure out that, you know, Barkevious Mingo is going to be a good pass rusher in the NFL.
Well, this would appear to be one of the more interesting drafts in recent memory, not so much because of the star power, actually quite the opposite. Because there aren't a number of true stars in this draft, do you feel that's made it more difficult to predict?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been doing the draft stuff for SB Nation since the 2009 draft, which was the Matthew Stafford draft. I've been doing draft stuff, golly, since 2001 online. And this is the most difficult one I can remember, at least, because, you know, there's not those quarterbacks at the top, which kind of set the tone for where the rest of the draft is going to fall. And, you know, really, I just think this is a pretty poor draft in general. There's so many question marks with all the top players. Like I said, there's none of those great quarterbacks, and this is the first time in 50 years where a running back might not be taken in the first round. So there's just so many more holes to try and fill, and the players you're trying to fill those holes with just aren't that great.
Dan, so now this is your fifth year evaluating, predicting, prognosticating the draft. What trends have you seen with how NFL teams are evaluating college players, whether it's looking at specific conferences, looking at specific positions, valuing certain things over anything else? Something that I've always felt just philosophically is to let somebody else use a really high pick on offensive skill that isn't a quarterback. You let somebody else take a running back high, let somebody else take a receiver high, and build your team from the inside out. What trends have you noticed in the 4 or 5 years now that you've been doing this for a living?
Well, well, unfortunately, I can't do this for a living. I have a real life job at a newspaper. So,
don't tell anybody.
This is just my hobby, but I spend a lot of time doing it. But no, you know, the trend it changes from year to year. I mean, for a while, you saw NFL teams trying to catch up with spread offenses in college, and how do you evaluate spread players? And eventually that turned into, screw it, let's just put some spread principles in the NFL. You know, now the trend, obviously, is, as you guys well know, is tilted toward SEC players. It's, you know, basically, you're not seeing running backs anymore high. You're not seeing so many wide receivers high, other than a couple of years ago with Green and Jones. You're kind of seeing, you know, if we don't have a quarterback, obviously, that's number one. And then after that, it's like left tackle, defensive tackle, and then a pass rusher, cornerback. So you're kind of seeing the importance of things slotted pretty specifically in that fashion.
All right, and when you look at this year specifically, because there is so much to talk about with the 2013 draft, excuse me, where is the momentum position-wise, school-wise, conference-wise? What is the overarching thing that you keep coming back to when you look at the group of talent in front of you?
Well, one of the overarching things for me, as I said, I'm in Akron. I went to the University of Akron, so I'm a unbiased Mac homer.
Okay.
so, you know, I think it's very neat that a Mac player is going to get taken in the top five of the draft.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, you know, Alabama is the place where everything starts. You know, Warmack, Milliner, Fluker, Barrett Jones even, all those guys are probably going to be starters next year in the NFL. So, you know, to me, that's where the momentum goes. And it's kind of shifting a little bit. You're seeing Texas A&M players, for instance. We've had Luke Jokel as our top player, I think, all season. And they're just going to keep pumping players out, I think, so long as they keep Kevin Sumlin there. So, you know, you're just kind of seeing these teams stand out and really drive the direction of the draft. I mean, there's going to be a ton of Georgia players this year, on defense particularly. How they were so terrible last season is beyond me. But there's a ton of Georgia players who are going to get taken in the first 2 days of the draft, so you're kind of seeing that more. I mean, a few years ago, you were kind of seeing Miami and Florida State dominating in that regard. Now you're kind of seeing teams like Alabama, Georgia, and Texas A&M, and LSU, and those kind of teams really push the draft in a certain direction.
Is there a myth about Alabama football players in the NFL? Because in college, if you play at Alabama, it's sort of like playing on sacred ground. Instantly, you think the players at Alabama might be better than some of the players playing elsewhere. You get to the NFL, it's more of a level playing field. And I heard an argument that I didn't necessarily agree with recently, but someone said, well, hey, just because they're from Alabama, that shouldn't make a team any more or less likely to select them. Where do you stand on Alabama players and how they project forward?
Well, the feeling is that Nick Saban coaches his players so well that there's not big potential with them. So kind of whatever you're seeing is what you're going to get. You know, whereas with, like, these LSU players, for instance, we have a good guess of how good Barkevious Mingo is going to be, or last year Michael Brockers, but we really don't know. But with these Alabama players, you know, we kind of know what D. Milliner is, you know, straight away. You know, particularly defensive backs from Alabama, the knock has been that they don't get taught backpedaling and turning and flipping their hips open and running with receivers. And that's kind of proven to be true for the most part. With the Alabama players, they're just so advanced. I mean, Barrett Jones is probably going to go into some lineup and start running the whole offensive line as a rookie. So they're just so advanced football intelligence-wise that I think teams aren't afraid to take them. They're maybe not going to be the top players in the draft.
Is there a school, when you look at the college football landscape, and we know the traditional powers, USC, Texas, Alabama, LSU, Ohio State, Oklahoma, we know those powers. We've seen the teams that generally succeed year in and year out. But is there a school, much in the same way that Virginia was randomly developing and getting offensive and defensive linemen of a first-round grade, is there a school more recently than that, that has not had the success on the college level, but is consistently churning out high-level NFL players, or at least highly drafted NFL players?
Yeah, definitely. Missouri is the first school that kind of comes to my mind. You know, this year we've got Sheldon Richardson and a couple other defensive players. And then, you know, obviously in a couple of years we'll have the wide receiver, Green Beckham, coming out. Their players haven't always panned out. Blaine Gabbert, a couple of years ago, they're not a premier program. They're a good program, maybe not in the SEC now, but they were in the Big 12, where, you know, it's not the traditional powerhouse school. Like you said, it's not an Ohio State or Michigan or Alabama or whatever. So Missouri kind of sticks out. Like I mentioned, Texas A&M, Utah had a nice string of good players. That they're not a big spotlight team. I mean, they've had good seasons, but they're Utah, so right. They're not, you know, in the spotlight. So those are the kind of schools, to me, that it's always fun to kind of dig around and find those guys.
All right, $64 million question. Who is the best quarterback in this draft?
None of them. I hate them all, for the most part, if I'm being completely honest. I would be very scared if my team was taking a quarterback in the first two rounds this year. But, you know, if you had to pinch me down and pick one, you know, we've had Geno Smith at the top for pretty much the whole process. Basically, with him, there are the least amount of flaws, which is not a very nice way of evaluating a player. But, you know, he has a good enough arm. You kind of wonder what he'll be like in the NFL, where he's not going to have Tavon Austin, probably, where you can just drop him a 2-yard pass and it goes for 60 yards. Or, you know, he's probably not going to be with Stedman Bailey, the wide receiver he's been teammates with since high school. So there's a whole timing thing that was in sync so amazingly in college, where, you know, that's maybe not going to happen. But, you know, he's a smart player. I've talked to him on a couple occasions. And, you know, he just comes across well and he gets it. So, you know, probably him. I like Matt Barkley a lot more than most people for pretty much the same reasons. He doesn't have as strong of an arm, but, you know, I think he prepares himself really well. He's very intelligent. I think he was a little more hurt last year than, you know, people realized, especially earlier in the year. So those are my top two. And after that, I just really think it's a close your eyes, grab one, and hope for the best.
Well, let's talk about Geno Smith for another minute. Obviously an athletic guy. He ran a good 40. No doubt he's a quality quarterback, but I think we're in agreement here that he's not exactly giving us the warm fuzzies as an NFL quarterback. Certainly not in the first round, maybe not even as a first quarterback off the board. Are teams looking at him and they're saying, all right, he ran this 40 time. He's obviously got some athleticism. He could be the next Cam Newton or RG3. Or is it just so thin a position that he is simply the prettiest girl in the class?
I think it's definitely the latter. I mean, ever since the combine, he's been trying to convince NFL teams that he can run, but you know, maybe it was the product of the West Virginia offense. He never really did run a lot. I mean,
no,
there were never those big breakout running plays that you even saw from people like Andrew Luck, not just Robert Griffin, who's a an anomaly. Smith has the athleticism, but a lot of times these guys who are athletic, it just doesn't show up on the field. So, you know, for the longest time, he just was dead set on telling everybody he was pocket quarterback. You know, even, you know, I think we interviewed him in October when he was basically on the, you know, Heisman front runner, and all he wanted to talk about was how good he was standing in the pocket and delivering throws. He refused to talk about, you know, why he doesn't run more. So now he's kind of going in the opposite direction, saying, hey, I can run the read option, everybody. You know, just trust me on this one, kind of. I don't have anything to prove.
Right, of course.
My numbers. So it's a dangerous thing because, you know, you never know when these guys who don't run a lot, who can get out running and they get popped a few times, how they're going to respond to it. So, you know, I think his athleticism is good, but I just don't know how good he can use it.
Okay, well, in other news, the Honey Badger is throwing a party on Thursday. I don't know if you heard about this. He seems fairly confident. Yeah. He's going in the first round. How likely is this to occur, and ultimately, how do you see him projecting as an NFL player?
Well, tragically, I think the party is off.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
That's a shame.
Yeah, while we were waiting here, he tweeted out how the party was off, which is really unfortunate because, you know, we have a bunch of people in New York, and the one guy was going to try and go get in on the party.
So do you think he canceled the party because people were making fun of him or because he lost confidence?
Not a confidence thing. I think he probably just realizes, you know, maybe Tyrann Mathieu hosting a late-night after-party in New York can only lead to not-so-good things.
So he canceled the Facebook invite then?
I think so, yeah. Sorry, you're going to have to find other plans tomorrow night.
Okay. Well, how does he project then? Where do you see him going?
You know, I think he projects to a team as a safety. A lot of times at LSU, teams would view him as the middle linebacker. They would point him out pre-snap, and because he can move all around the field and he can tackle well, and he can certainly, you know, cause havoc and you know, force fumbles and all that sort of stuff. So the concern is all the character things. I mean, you just have to wonder about a guy who gets in all of this trouble, yet he still has the idea to throw a party, or, you know, he was on the cover of ESPN, the magazine. To me, he's just someone who just tries to call attention to himself so much. I wouldn't draft him, personally, just because of all those things. So I think, you know, he's probably going to go in the fourth round or late third round or something. He could be a good NFL player, but for his whole career, I think, you're just going to wait for that other shoe to drop and for him to do something stupid. So that's the concern. You know, do you use a pick and a roster spot on a player like that where, you know, he might be on a one strike and he's out kind of thing?
He's dropped 11 shoes, by the way. When you look at your draft board, when you look at everybody else's, when you look at the prospects available, of course, that's everybody at the time of recording. Not to say who are the best players, and this sort of relates to Tyrann Mathieu, but who are the safest players? Who are the players that you're most sure will be successful NFL players for the next 5 to 7 years?
Yeah. Our top three guys are Luke Jokel, Star Lotulelei, and Chance Warmack. And they're largely our top three guys because of how safe they are. You know, particularly Lotulelei and Warmack. You know, you know exactly what you're going to get with them. They're both big, powerful players who play up front, and there's to me, you know, there's a little bit less risk there. I think they're pretty safe. I think Jarvis Jones of Georgia is kind of safe. I mean, I don't think he's ever going to be a superstar Von Miller part two kind of player, but I think he's fairly safe. As far as players on offense go, playmakers at least, Tyler Eifert of Notre Dame probably fits that description as a safe player. But, you know, other than that, I'm really quite afraid of a lot of players in this draft. I mean, DJ Fluker of Alabama, another offensive lineman, is pretty safe. Larry Warford, yet another offensive lineman, a guard from Kentucky, he's probably pretty safe. You know, so to me, that's just how this draft is. The safe players are at the positions where, you know, fans aren't going to be happy when they're taken, probably.
All right. And Andy Staples from Sports Illustrated, I'm not sure if you saw this yesterday, published his all underrated and overrated list of draft prospects. And something interesting he did was he compared Deion Jordan, of course, the outside linebacker defensive end from Oregon, to Chase Thomas, who played a similar role in a similarly schemed defense at Stanford. They played against the same offensive lines, and Andy Staples correctly pointed out that Chase Thomas was more successful, inflicted more damage during his time at Stanford than Deion Jordan did at Oregon. Curious as to what your reaction is, and do you defend what he says, or are you defending the commonly held thought that Deion Jordan is the superior draft prospect? What is the line of thinking there?
Well, you know, with Chase Thomas, there's a couple reasons why we have Deion Jordan rated in the top 15 and Chase Thomas is rated 85th overall. You know, Thomas had some injury stuff, so that's the first thing.
Right.
Not as big. He's 6'3", 240. So, you know, the growth potential isn't quite there compared to a guy who is 6'5 plus and nowhere near his physical potential, whereas Thomas is probably a little closer to that. When you watch them play, Jordan is just so much faster in his first step. And with an outside linebacker, particularly one that's going to probably play in a 3-4 system like Jordan is going to, like Thomas is probably going to and did at Stanford, that first step is the most important thing. So to me, you know, you hear the stupid buzzwords like quick twitch, and Jordan has that. Thomas doesn't quite as much. I mean, I think Thomas is a pretty decent player. I think he's going to be a okay piece on a 3-4 team if that's who he's picked by, but he just doesn't have that pure freaky athleticism like Jordan does.
All right, and one of the reasons I think a lot of people listening to this show or not listening to the show are interested in this draft, especially because the talent level is lower than in previous years, is because there have been some interesting coaching hires, and people are curious to see the direction that they go in when building their new teams. The easy answer is probably Chip Kelly, but what are the storylines that you're most interested in with the new hires as it relates to team needs and the prospects that could fit their future systems?
Yeah, it's not really a team need thing that immediately comes to mind, but when the Buffalo Bills hired Doug Marrone out of Syracuse, one of the first things that they talked about was using analytics more. And to me, that was the first time where an NFL team was really open about using analytics in their scouting department. I mean, it's a thing that's pretty well used in the NFL, but there's not a lot of teams that come right out and say, you know, we're going to use this as a fairly big piece of our analysis. So to me, that was the most interesting thing. And, you know, I think it kind of goes back to what we were talking about before about how things are evolving. I think that's going to factor in a lot more. So, you know, it's not really a needs thing. But, you know, sticking with Buffalo, there's been a lot of talk that Ryan Nassib could follow his old coach there. And if not him, probably Matt Barkley. So, you know, the Bills are the team that needs a quarterback. So that's the need fit with a new coach. The other one that I've been trying to get a really good beat on is the Jaguars with Gus Bradley. Mm-hmm. You know, his defense, it just screams for a player like Deion Jordan to play the Leo position, which is this, you know, big in vogue position that the Seahawks use so well. And Jordan's a perfect fit for that, and he would be a good pick second overall. But whether whether or not they go that route, you know, who knows. But so those are a couple new team needs plus coaches combinations that I think are pretty interesting to follow.
Where do you have no idea on your draft board? Where, because I mean, I noticed with the Eagles, you've had a few different players, but I've noticed a lot of different teams and selections. You've had a few different options. Where are you the least certain that a team is going to go?
Well, up until this week, it was Buffalo by quite a large margin. I mean, I think it was kind of strange with Buffalo, and I hate to keep talking about Buffalo if you don't have a lot of Buffalo fans, but you know, we started out with Ryan Nassib there, I think, in December, and it's just kind of evolved. At one point, it was Cordarrelle Patterson, and at another point, it was Kenny Vaccaro, and at another point, it was Geno Smith. So they were a very hard team to get a beat on until this week, when we kind of all found out that they're after one of these quarterbacks out of necessity more than anything.
Right.
A little further down, Carolina's a little bit difficult to peg. They could go for a defensive tackle. That's the big obvious need, but a lot of people think they might take Kenny Vaccaro of Texas if he's there. The Rams have been a little bit challenging only because they've had two picks the whole time. So when we're putting together a mock draft, it's like, well, you know, do they take Vaccaro? And if they don't, you know, at 16, will he be there at 22? And then, you know, there's just the teams that don't talk at all. You know, nothing gets out about the Packers and the Patriots and the Ravens, you know, probably for good reason. But, you know, they're always difficult to figure out what they're going to do as well.
Dan mentioned the Philadelphia Eagles, the team right in my backyard. They are very intriguing at number four overall, if they stay at number four overall, because it at least would seem now that there is some interest in potentially trading back. One of those rare chances that we as fans get to see how an innovative college mind translates to the next level. Because of that, a lot of buzz right now. I saw even on your site, a lot of buzz about Tavon Austin, a guy you called the best playmaker in the draft, potentially being selected by Chip Kelly. Whether that's at four, whether that's at 12, how do you gauge Chip Kelly and the Eagles' interest in a guy like Tavon Austin?
I really don't think there's a lot of interest with Philadelphia and Tavon Austin. I mean, I know there was the news report, and we were going off that a little bit, but to me, Chip Kelly is the kind of coach that can play anybody at wide receiver and make them productive. For the most part, I think I've been thinking front line, you know, defensive line, offensive line for them. They're another team where Jordan is a perfect fit. You know, it is sort of funny, I think that kind of dawned on everybody at some point in March or something, and why wouldn't he be a perfect fit for Philadelphia? You know, he knows the system that they're going to run on defense, and you know, he's this great athlete and everything. But, you know, they might need an offensive tackle, too, because both of their guys are coming back from injury, Harriman and Jason Peters. So, you know, I just think that their need along the front lines on both sides of the ball is too great to take a player like Austin fourth overall. Now, if they trade back, you know, the depth of this draft is offensive line and defensive line. If they trade back somewhere, you know, that's when you could probably see him take Tavon Austin. But at fourth overall, I think that's a little bit high.
Each year there is a player that takes a pretty enormous tumble with where some experts expected them to land, either probably in the first half of the first round. And there are years, or it seems every year, where somebody who is slotted by most of the prognostications as being a second, third, fourth round grade, and then they go in the first 20 picks. We saw that last year with Bruce Irvin. So I'm going to give you an opportunity to sound really smart right now. And who are your tumble candidates, and who are your rocket candidates? And I want a player that you don't have in your first round that you're going to take a stab at as coming out of nowhere and ending up in the first 20 picks.
This is a hard-hitting show, Dan, so we're not going to let you off easy.
Well, I guess if I thought he'd be in the first 20 picks, I probably would have done it already. But
right.
Who
has top 20 talent?
Yeah. I think a lot of both ways on this points at the cornerbacks and what's going to happen with them. And there's two that are on the rise that are probably going to go in the first round kind of out of nowhere in the last couple of weeks. And because of that, it's going to push some other guys down. So the names that I have in mind going pretty high is DJ Hayden of Houston. I think everybody's pretty much on that one at this point. Where he's going to go, I'm not really sure, but all indications are some team in the first round is going to take him. And then the other cornerback that I think is going to jump into the first round could be Darius Slay of Mississippi State. He was kind of like a one-year wonderish type of player, but he has good size, and I think he ran a 4.34 at the combine. So he's a guy that I think, like the Falcons in the back half of the first round, he could be the pick for them, and people are going to be like, wow, who's this guy? And, you heard it here first on the Solid Verbal, I guess, that,
nice.
That's who. So, if those guys go in the first round, that means someone like Desmond Trufant of Washington, maybe Xavier Rhodes of Florida State, and obviously Jonathan Banks of Mississippi State could fall a little bit.
All right, and on a very similar note, but I guess there's a different twist to it, who are you confident won't go in the first round? You're confident will be a third or fourth round player, but is sort of like your secret crush of the draft, that whoever takes them, you're like, ooh, I really like that pick, no matter who takes them. But yeah. Third or fourth, I'll give you mine, just because okay. I've seen him play, because I waste a lot of time watching West Coast football, and I think he's going to make a team very happy in whatever round he's taken. Philip Thomas at the safety position. He's my secret crush of the draft. Who do you have?
Oh, I have quite a lot of secret crushes. you're an Oregon guy, so you'll know this one. I like Kyle Long quite a bit. I just think he's so raw and nowhere near how good he can be. He's a guy who, if he could have gone back to Oregon, if the NCAA would have allowed it, I think he would have developed into a first-round player if he would have had one more year of college football. He's so athletic. His feet are so quick.
Mm-hmm.
He's overcome a lot, but he's a good guy. Like, he's the kind of guy you want to be friends with. And that sounds really silly when you're talking about evaluating a player and how good they're going to be in the NFL.
Right.
But he's just a guy who you're behind and you hope it's going to pan out, and there's enough reason to believe he will. So he's one. We don't have to go really in depth on the next one, but Marcus Lattimore is someone I refuse to think negatively of, despite
right.
how many knee injuries he's had. And like I said, I am a Mac homer, and despite the fact that I went to the University of Akron and I have season tickets to Akron Zips football, please
go Zips.
I'm a Brian Winters fan. He played tackle for Kent State, and he's just mean and nasty. He's going to hit you while you're down. He's going to be a guard in the NFL probably. He's a guy I like quite a lot. I think if he's put in at left tackle, he's someone that can really just set the tone for an offensive line. So, I guess I just like offensive linemen a lot this year, but, Long and Winters are the guys who I'm pretty big fans of, I guess.
All right, nice. We'll get you out of here with two more, Dan. So after tomorrow, the frenzy is sort of over, at least for a while. I know it's a year-round thing for you, but this is sort of the Super Bowl. How do you measure your own personal success as someone who covers this year-round? Is it how close you get with your mock draft? What is your barometer there?
I don't know. I don't really measure my mock drafts. I mean, my mock drafts get put into something called the Huddle Report Scoring Contest.
Right, right.
So we put our stuff in there. Mine do pretty well, I suppose. But it's going to sound kind of weird. I guess I judge my own personal success doing this based on page view numbers, and ours have gone up every year. So,
okay.
I think that's a little bit natural. But, we've never had a negative drop in traffic all of the years I've done it. So, to me, that's one way to measure it. I don't know. I don't really care for, this Huddle Report thing. They do a top 100 scoring. Also, the more players you get right in the top 100 picks, the more points you get or whatever. And I think Bob McGinn of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel is the leader in the clubhouse every year in those. But to me, you may as well just put together a three-round mock draft, which is just a miserable experience to do. So, success, I guess, is measured in how much people like your stuff and read it and tell other people about it and all that kind of jazz.
All right. Spoken like a true businessman with the page views. I like it. I can't let you go without asking a Manti Te'o question. You know that.
Great.
I mean, we're not going to know until tomorrow.
Yeah.
But ultimately, how much do you feel that Lene Kakua, that whole incident, how much did it hurt Manti's draft stock?
Not a lot, really. I mean, I still think he's going to be a first-round pick. Largely because there's a few teams in the back half of the first round that just need a middle linebacker, namely the Minnesota Vikings, who are hardcore Notre Dame fans. I think
yes.
they have six Notre Dame players on their roster, five or six. The Broncos really need a middle linebacker, but Teo's not super athletic, so he might not be a great fit for what they need out of their middle linebacker. And the Ravens, who that's what I'm going to go with in my last mock draft here, is Teo to the Ravens. And that's another one of those picks where, you know, we were doing it in December and, you know, we fell off it for a little bit and now it's back again. So, you know, I think he's going to be a first-round pick. I think he's going to be a pretty good player in the NFL, so long as he can get past the initial locker room ribbing that he's inevitably going to get. So, you know, I think teams have to know what they're getting out of him. You know, he's not going to be a wild and crazy sideline to sideline player. He's going to be a linebacker that has to play going forward and get through gaps and try and get in the backfield and occasionally drop into zone coverage. But you know, I think he's a pretty good player, and I'm not too ashamed to say that. I think some people are that they like Manti Te'o. But you know, I think he's going to be decent. I don't think he's ever going to be the worst part of a defense that he's on. And you know, if you can get a guy like that who can play and start for 8 to 10 years, I think there's a lot more value in that certainty than there is hoping you hit on Alec Ogletree by comparison.
All right. Well, good stuff here. Again, you can check out mockingthedraft.com for more of Dan's fine work. What does tomorrow bring for you then? What is your draft-watching situation? Are you at home with a bunch of TVs and the Twitter up? I mean, what's your setup?
Yeah, we've got a 60-inch television, which is way too large to see Mel Kiper's hair.
That's a lot of draft, Dan.
It is. You know, a couple of computers going. I think we're going to be having a live blog on the site.
Okay.
We're going to have pick-by-pick stuff. We have a bunch of people in New York. Yeah, it's going to be pretty fun. It's going to be crazy. But that's every year, you know. And
sure.
The best part is that on Sunday and Monday, after everything is over for 2013... we're going to have a 2014 mock draft and 2014 player rankings.
Yeah. So. Well, very good stuff. Best of luck to you. I appreciate you stopping by and giving us so much of your time here. And we'll be sure to check out your coverage, mockingthedraft.com.
Awesome.
Okay, again, his name, Dan Kadar.
Yeah, real good.
Find his work at mockingthedraft.com. Dan, how long have we done this show?
We've done it since 2008, 5 years.
2008, we've done it for five full college football
that
seasons.
That math works, yeah.
That was one of the better interviews I think we've ever done.
That was fantastic. And we've been happy with all of our draft shows. We've been happy with a ton of our shows overall. He was really good, very measured,
yeah.
Spoke very well, had answers, didn't hem and haw. A big, big fan of his appearance on the Solid Verbal, my weird voice and coughing notwithstanding.
Yeah, that was very, very good. I wanted to mention, I didn't have a chance during the interview, but
yeah.
On the way up here, I heard a radio interview with Sharif Floyd. Sharif Floyd's a local guy, grew up near Philly.
Sheriff.
Sure. And there is some talk that he could end up at 4 to the Eagles if the Eagles stay there and if the Raiders don't take him at 3 or,
right.
You know, if the Jags, if the Chiefs don't take him, who knows? What a great story, essentially raising himself from 16 on up. Took some time away from the area to get his head straight down at Florida. And I think whoever ends up with him is getting a mature guy, a great football player, certainly on the inside part of the line. And it's good to hear stories like this.
Absolutely. No, there are a number of great stories. But, yeah, he is certainly in the spotlight. And you hope for somebody to do quite well and sort of finish things out. And Marcus Lattimore, another guy, obviously,
Dan
mentioned. It's just impossible not to root for him after what he's been through physically and sort of what everybody says about his personality. I'm never one to fully believe that people know football players, really, because you're putting out an image of what you want people to think. But all signs point to it being a terrific story if Marcus Lattimore is able to fully recover and contribute to an NFL team sooner rather than later.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right. Well, big thanks again to Dan Kadar from MockingTheDraft.com for stopping by here. I'm sure he's busy. It was very generous of him to give us so much of his time. Dan, this is going to be my last show for a little over 2 weeks. Yeah, I'm getting the shoulder looked at on Friday. I won't
looked
be recording
at,
for
cut open.
Cut open, prodded, what have you.
Yeah.
I won't
What's
be
the
back.
Actual process? Like, what are they doing? Because I know you, it's a torn labrum, correct?
It is a torn labrum.
So in layman's terms, what are they actually going in and doing?
In layman's terms, first let me explain what happened.
Hit me.
My shoulder popped out of socket.
Happens.
Which is every bit as painful as you might expect.
Right.
This was the second time it happened. When it happens twice, there's really 100% chance that something is terribly wrong with all the muscles in your shoulder or with some
right.
of them.
Okay.
In my case, the shoulder popped out and the labrum tore. And if I don't get it operated on, I have about an 80% chance of it happening again. Who knows when that would be? So I decided, well, let's play the percentages and let's go with the 90% chance it never happens again and let's get the surgery. What they are doing is essentially sewing up my labrum, which I'm told has been blown to smithereens.
Oof.
And they're sewing it back up, and then I believe they are drilling portions of it back into my bone, which I'm really excited about.
Get it.
And that's that. Then I'm looking at 3 to 4 months recovery and about a month in a sling.
All right. Are you getting good drugs? Do you request drugs? Can you get more drugs than they recommend? How does that work?
So here's a fun fact.
Yeah.
You know, even when I go to the dentist, I don't like the Novocaine.
It's smart. It's healthy.
I don't like that stuff. So I'm going to try and avoid the pain meds as much as I can. I don't know what they're giving me.
Will you be under during the surgery, or will you be like,
God, I hope so.
At your open shoulder?
I hope.
That'd be great. You're like, oh, guys, looking great. Keep drill.
The sad thing is I think I'd be somewhat interested in watching it, but no.
My dad has video. My dad had shoulder surgery a few years ago.
Really?
And he had what's called, like in layman's terms, a frozen shoulder. It was a scar tissue situation.
Okay.
And they basically go in with a vacuum of sorts, and they clean it up. And he had video of it and showed me, and it was kind of cool. Are you going to get that?
If I can get video, I'm putting it up on the Solid Verbal YouTube channel.
Hell yeah.
I would love to watch that.
That'd be fantastic. No, seriously, request a video. I think you can probably get it done.
That'd be tremendous. All right, well, I'm going to do that. It'll be
awesome.
Our next big viral hit. There you go.
Well, I wish you the finest of luck in your recovery. I'm not going to see you on Friday. That's not how that's working.
You won't see me on Friday. For those wondering now, just because I'm not recording doesn't mean the Solid Verbal won't be recording. Because Dan has so graciously offered to carry things forward in my absence. So do stay tuned to our show over the next few weeks as Dan will bring his own brand of comedy and college football know-how to the table.
Little to no racism
is
what I am promising.
All right, Dan. Well, enjoy the draft tomorrow. Enjoy the weekend.
Thank
I will
you.
Talk to you,
you
soon.
As well.
I will talk to all of you out there soon. Enjoy the draft. Enjoy your weekend as well. For that guy over there in New York, for myself, Ty, here in good old Allentown, thanks again for listening to the Solid Verbal. Catch you all in a little while. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.